That was Who Would Jesus Bomb? I think you got the message pretty clear from the song. David Rovix wrote that song. David, so you described yourself as not particularly religious or spiritual or something. Who would you call your core group? Who would you call your, I don't know, your homies, your the people who support you and you support them, and they're always you're going to be there for each other? What kind of associations do you have like that?
Well, it's a wonderfully diverse group of people. I've been really blessed to come into contact, you know, regular contact with a lot of different kinds of people all over the world. It'd be tough to, I don't know, I guess I could generalize and say it's people who are struggling for making the world a better place in generally progressive left-wing kind of ways. I guess that would be a real broad kind of way to sweep them all together, but I can tell you who these people are because, for better or for worse, it's often only one kind of set that will tend to come to a gig, depending on who organizes the gig, for example. So sometimes I'll play for a crowd of mostly anti-war activists where the average age might be 50, and although there'd be a lot of younger and older folks. But then I'll do a gig for the so-called anti-globalization crowd, which will tend to be, you know, an average of at least 20 years younger and more of them dressed in black and more facial piercings. But then the next day I might do a gig at a Palestinian cultural center where most of the crowd will be from somewhere in the Arab world. It varies in wonderful ways. I play for the communists in Denmark. I used to play for the communists almost as much as I played for the anarchists, and the crowds would be totally different crowds. I mean, they never come to each other's gigs. And the hippies, too. Like, they got their own playing at Christiania, for example, in Copenhagen, or playing in town in a squat or something. It'll be two entirely separate crowds sometimes. And it's kind of amusing how it is, but it's easy to tell who my audience is anyway.
It's too bad we can't get all of those crowds to unite together. I think that would be a really powerful, positive force in the world.
It certainly can be done sometimes, but it requires organizers that have their tentacles in all of those communities. And that's not that common. I guess if I were more famous, then, you know, sort of me having my tentacles in all those communities would work if I got some media coverage for a gig or something.
Well, we'll do what we can to help spread the word here. Speaking of the great uniters, love is the great uniters. And I think the next song you picked is, in its deepest sense, it's a personal love song, but it's a song about affirmation, all this kind of thing. Why did you pick Life is Beautiful as part of your Song of the Soul?
I think it's so important to remember, as if anybody could forget, that if any of us who are trying to make the world a better place are probably feeling that way because we have an attachment to life, and we think that the world is actually a beautiful place that's worth saving. I think people that are feeling generally hopeless or discouraged or unhappy don't maybe think that it's worth saving as much as those of us who actually think the world's a wonderful place and humanity is generally a beautiful species. And I certainly feel that way. And that song is a more overt communication of that idea than a lot of others.
Let's listen to Life is Beautiful by David Rovix.
You're sitting there in front of me, floating in a cloud. Your chocolate eyes meet mine, you're whispering out loud. Thoughts that make me shiver, words that make me melt. Now I can only be thankful for the deal I've been dealt. For the birds outside this window, for this guitar on my knee. For the smile on your lips, for the good you found in me. Looking at the wood stove and the towels upon the sink, with your fingers on my forehead, all that I can think is life is beautiful.